Okay. So this week is Parsha Yitro. In Yitro we have what we can call, let's try to break up the Parsha and then we'll see how we can take things apart, put them back together. We have the whole introduction, which is really quite interesting what it's doing here. The introduction is when Yitro arrives. He hears something and he comes, and then we have Mimacharat. Mimacharat, by the way, is incredibly important. I'm going to come back to that in a second. And then he gives all this advice in terms of the judicial setup and so on. Afterwards, we have Perek Yutet, which is the introduction to Matan Torah. Then we have Aseret HaDibron and Perek Kaf, and then we have the Pesukim afterwards. We then move into Parshat Mishpatim, which probably we can save for next week, with the first three chapters of Mishpatim, and then Perek of Dalid somehow is related to Matan Torah again, and we're not exactly sure what the relationship should be, and essentially the question is, do you want to follow Rashi, do you want to follow the Ramban, do you assume that there is chronological integrity in the Torah, which is the way in English to say Mukdam U'Mukhar or Ein Mukdam U'Mukhar, is there chronological integrity, or is there no chronological integrity, even though last week was something which may not have been in the proper sequence. Anybody notice what that was? Okay, I'll help you. When it says that they ate the man for 40 years, that would seem to be a little difficult to say that that happened right then. So, and by the way, the Ramban wouldn't argue on cases like that. The Ramban doesn't say that it's never that there's something out of sequence. He says that the assumption is it's always out of sequence unless you have absolute no ability to say otherwise. In the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, you'll have a couple of examples like that, where you, there's nothing you can do, because at one point you're in the second year in the second month, and then you're in the second year in the first month, so there's just nothing you can do about it. So the Ramban's not going to try to give you some kind of explanation. The Ramban knows that it's just not in the proper sequence over here, and similarly in this case where the 40 years. Yitro arrives, and part of what we have to ask ourselves, what does this have to do with anything, right? And especially going to Rashi. The problem is going to Rashi. Going to the Ramban, there's no problem about anything, because everything follows the right sequence, so you can't ask why it's here. It's here because right now is when it happened. According to Rashi, we have somewhat of a problem, because what does Rashi say? Mimacharat. What day is it? No. After Yom Kippur. So Rashi says it's the day after Yom Kippur. The next time that Rashi brings up that same date is all the way back in, or forward where? In Parshat Vayakhel. By Yakel, he gathers them together after the second luchot were given, because then we get up to Yom Kippur. So that means we're down by around Perek. What is it? Around Perek Lamed Dalid Lamed Hey is when. So according to Rashi, Perek Yudched and Lamed Dalid basically are happening at the same time. So that's a little disturbing. So again, you have to then ask yourself, well, if this didn't happen till then, why didn't they just put the story of Yitro back over there, and what's it doing over here? So that then becomes a question. The other question that comes up is what Rashi does with Perek Kaf Dalet, because Perek Kaf Dalet, really, according to Rashi, takes place together with Perek Yutet, so then why did we just now break it up and put part over there and part over here? And that becomes the second difficulty with Rashi. So let's start with Yitro, and then we'll just see how far we can get. Right. Sorry, no, the other way around. The Ramban says Ain, and the Rashi, meaning the Ramban says that everything follows the proper order, unless black and white it says otherwise. Rashi is not bothered to say, no, that this happened here and this happened there. So for Rashi, Perek Kaf Dalet and Perek Yutet are interdispersed. You read one pasuk here and one pasuk there. To understand the psukim leading up to Matan Torah, you have to read Yutet and Kaf Dalet together, which nobody does, so therefore you don't understand what's going on in terms of. And so is Yutet. So I'll say it again. According to Rashi, you need to read those two together and understand what one pasuk says and how the other pasuk is connected to it. So I'm just simply, Yud-Ted and Kaf-Dalet are interdispersed, and therefore to understand Yud, I'll say it again, if you want to understand Perek Yud-Ted this week, you have to read it together with Kaf-Dalet according to Rashi, according to the Ramban. No, according to the Ramban, it's in its proper sequence. So Kaf-Dalet is way later and has nothing to do with Yud-Ted. Excuse me? Kaf Dalet Yud Het, the end of Mishpatim and the beginning or middle of Yitro. Okay, so let's try this again. Yitro comes, he's very happy, they make a party, and what do they do? What's the party consist of? Read the Pasuk. It sure sounds like they're bringing Korban out. What does it say? What does the Pasuk, read the Pasuk? Right, so it sure sounds like they're bringing Korban out. So bringing Korban out, that would seem to imply that we already have a Mishkan. So therefore, that's the case. We're way, way, way further along the way. Yeah. He does. Again, depending on all kinds of things. But so you want to say that it's Korban out without, you can say, but that's why I want you to read the Pasuk. That's why I want you to read the Pasuk.
Right after they built
a Mizbeach. Right. So that also becomes very interesting what that Mizbeach is doing there as well. Good. Good. And I'm willing to back off immediately from this idea that there's a Mishkan already. But I just want you to read the Pasuk already. No. And they ate it, where? Lefnei. That's what bothers me more. The Lefnei Elokim bothers me more than the bringing it, which means, like, what does Lefnei Elokim mean in that context? That's the problem. Okay? Good. When Yitro arrives, and after the party and the eating and whatever korbanot, he sees that Moshe is sitting in judgment all day. So what's ironic about that? Okay, good. So judging based on what? Now you understand what may have pushed Rashi to make it after Matan Torah. It's before Matan Torah. What's he judging them on? Good. Although you could say it's based upon Mora. Okay. Okay, but what's ironic? That's not ironic. I need to define the word ironic then. That's interesting. That's not ironic. What's ironic about him finding that Moshe is sitting in judgment? Okay. Is that ironic? Okay. Exactly. That's ironic. Is that Moshe goes and gets involved in the Jews, and what does one of them say to him? Who made you?
King.
Not king. Right, who made you a judge? So then Moshe runs away, and because he got accused of being a judge when he's not a judge, he runs away, he ends up by Midian, but when he ends up by Midian, he meets the daughters by the well, and which apparently is a good place to meet girls, by a well. He meets them by the well, and that's how he becomes Moshe's son-in-law. So again, that now Yitro comes back and he sees Moshe sitting in judgment, but now what's the irony? Again, this is ironic. Now everybody has accepted him as a judge, and he's too much, meaning then nobody accepts him as a judge, and that's why he leaves, and now everybody accepts him as a judge, but it's too much. So therefore, we do have somewhat of an irony regarding Moshe's position as a judge. Now, if we try to understand this a little bit more, what is the suggestion that Yitro ends up giving to Moshe? So the easy part is, you can't do everything, you need to delegate. Good. What doesn't he delegate? What doesn't he delegate? What's going to be the exception to this? Fine. Delegate. Other people can sit, you know, and adjudicate. Read the pasuk. So what Moshe is doing is he's going to be in a position. Let me use the Gemara's Chakira, right? The Gemara Chakira regarding something completely different. A Kohen is a shliach of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, or a Kohen is a shliach of Am Yisrael, right? Yes, we know this. So by Moshe, if we read that pasuk again, is Moshe in this description a shliach of Am Yisrael or a shliach of a Kodesh Baruch Hu? And the answer is obviously both. Yes, do you see it or no? Do I have to do this? First of all, it's interesting, Vayihi Elokim Imach, God will be with you. That itself is interesting. What does it mean, God will be with you? What's that come to say? Haye atala am mula Elokim. Haye atala am mula Elokim. So you're going to represent the people in front of God. Again, Vata haye atala, sorry. Haye atala am mula Elokim. Veheveta ata et devarim Elokim. And you're going to bring the things to God. Vizharta et hem et echukim vetatarot. And you're going to bring the words from God down to the people. So I think that that's the reason why this pasuk is sitting over here. Or this whole section is doing over here. No, explain. I told you, everything's going to be easier this week. I want you to be able to do this. I don't want to do all the hard work. Yeah? Exactly. This now becomes the perfect... Forget when it happened. Explain. Explain how this is the perfect introduction to Har Sinai. Go ahead. It keeps going back and forth. Moshe's running back and forth. Now, again, let's try again. Why is this interesting? When we went through the entire, we call it the Exodus, it's Yitzhak Mitzrayim. There, Chazal end up going to the extreme position, and maybe too extreme, by saying Moshe wasn't involved. Right? Pesach night, Moshe's not involved. Where do we mention Moshe by the Seder? Right, it's in passing. Moshe's not there. Chazal go out of their way to take him out. And I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. Even the pasuk v'lo yadei malach v'lo yadei shaliach el kodesh baruch hu v'chod v'atzmo, that's only by makot b'chorot. But the other nine, Moshe was someone involved. But when we're watching Yetziat Mitzrayim, can we be deluded into thinking that Moshe really did not have the major role over there? Okay, let's start. Aaron is at least just as active. As a matter of fact, if you really want to give credit, you can say it's the Mateh. Right? The Mateh does all the stuff. I mean, Moshe's role is not that great. Moshe's role becomes great when we get to Perek Yud Tet. When we get to Sinai, that's where it becomes great. Matter of fact, this was already stated a long time ago. Where was it stated? Where was it stated? Okay, let me try with a different question, and then you'll give me the right answer. When Moshe was standing at the snare, he gives him various signs and wonders. What was the first oat? He gave him a couple. How many did he give him all together? Okay, what was the first oat that he gave him? Wrong. You're allowed to say I don't know. That's perfectly acceptable. So I'm going to ask the question again. Where was the first oath that the first sign that he gave him? Answer. Say it. I don't know. No. Finally. So let's. Yeah. Go ahead.
And he said.
Right, and it sounds like a total. It sounds like a total disconnected sentence. Okay, so let's go back because this is actually, as far as we're concerned today, I'm saying for a different time something else, but for today, the most important pasuk that was stated at the time of the Sneh was that pasuk. But we need to go back a little bit, and then you'll understand what I'm saying. Pasuk Yud, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, "Vatolcha v'eshlachicha el Paro." By the way, that's interesting. You will be my shliach, right? Lo yadei shliach. You're going to be my shliach to go to Paro. V'hutzei et ami b'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim. So Kodesh Baruch Hu just said two things: one, you will be my shliach to Paro, and two, you will take Am Yisrael out. V'yomer Moshe Elokim mi anochi kilech Paro. So what's Moshe responding to? The first thing, you're going to be on Shliach to Paro. So what's his answer is, I'm not worthy to go to Paro. But what was the other thing that he said? You will take the people out. And then, the second half of the pasuk, Moshe responds to the second thing that Kodesh Baruch Hu said. The Chiyot Tziyah B'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim, and I going to be the one to take them out? So by the way, what's the answer? The answer is yes. How do you know the answer is yes? Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu said both of those things. But now remember, there's a dual mission to Paro and to Am Yisrael. Moshe questioned on both of them. V'yomer, and the Kaddish Baruch Hu now says, this Pasuk Yud Bet, Ki Ayeh Imach, I will be with you. Is that important? Yes, that will facilitate. V'zelecha ha'ot, Ki Enochi Shlachticha, and this will be the sign that I sent you. Now the question is, the sign for whom? Is this the sign for Paro, or is this the sign for Am Yisrael? What's the end of the Pasuk? Botziacha et ha'am mitzrayim, when I take them out of Egypt. Hold it a second. What did Kodesh Baruch Hu just now completely skip over? The whole thing with Paro. Forget about that. Paro is not even, you know, a function in all this. Ta'avdunat Elokim alahar hazeh, you're going to serve God on this mountain. Now, let's begin to understand what's really interesting about this. One is, and this is the most important part, not just interesting, what in the world does that phrase mean? Ta'avdun et Elokim alahar hazeh. What does the phrase mean? If you work hard, you'll find at least three different interpretations. So what are the other two that you weren't going to say? Good. So there's at least three different interpretations that we'll find what this phrase means. Havdun et Elokim al ha'har hazeh. Now the other thing which is interesting is till this point, I would have done the following. I would have opened up the Brit Bein HaBetarim, opened it up on one hand, opened up the speech that God was giving to Moshe at the snare on the other hand, and just compare the two of them, because they're almost... It's a contract. The Brit Bein HaBetarim was a contract. God now is saying, I'm going to live up to the contract. Everything I said here, I'm going to do right over here. So it's very easy to follow. The one thing which is missing, or let me put it a little differently. What was the main focus of the Brit Bein HaBetarim? You're going to go down, you're going to be slaves, you're going to be slaves X amount of years, and then I'm going to take you out and bring you to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, what's missing within the Brit Bein HaBetarim? What is never mentioned over there? What's ever mentioned is any reference to Har Sinai. So that becomes now a real interesting question. Why is Har Sinai brought into all this? What do we need? Okay, I don't want this to sound totally crazy, but why in the world do we need Sinai? It's not part of the brochure, right? The brochure was, you go down to Egypt, you come out, come to Eretz Yisrael. Why do we need, I mean, again, I could ask the same question differently, but it will sound like it's a totally different question. But I hope you appreciate that it's connected. My question would be, why do they need to spend 40 years in the desert? And you're going to say, what do you mean, what do they need? Things got messed up. Excuse me? Become a nation is interesting. But why couldn't God, that now will sound really bad, so I apologize. Why couldn't God just keep his word? Right, they really sounded bad now, right? Why couldn't God just keep his word and take them out of Egypt and bring terror to Israel? Whoever said that this whole, you have to make it to the nation, this whole generation has to die, which means, well, why did all this get so complicated? Also, what's that, before you answer, do you hear a question right now? Which means, the Brit Bein HaBetarim lines up very nicely with the speech at the snare till we got to this point. And this point, we also have to realize, why did we get to this point? Because Moshe's asking questions. So who's Moshe's question on? Is it on God? We don't want to say that. Is it on Am Yisrael? We don't like to say that. Is it on himself? Who is he questioning? Is he questioning that, oh, they're not going to listen to me? Why? Is the Chisaron in Moshe or is the Chisaron in Am Yisrael? Why won't they listen? What's the problem? And how is that problem going to get fixed? By the way, on a contractual level, any of you will at some point become lawyers, how would you defend God? No one ever said that it's going to take so long. No one's spent so much time in the desert. How would he defend God anyway? That's not a good enough... What? It said 400 years. Yeah, it said 400 years. You never lived up to the 400 years. Which means if they really had to leave too quickly... One second. If they really had to leave too quickly because they couldn't stay any longer, maybe there's a price to be paid for that. Let me try that again. There's a passage in the Zohar. I told you this already, right? It says that they sunk to the 49th level of Tuma. If they sunk to the 49th level of Tuma, what are they going to need? They're going to need to get to at least the 49th level of Kedusha. How does that somehow connect with going to Sinai? You can do it. Right. Which means that's exactly the point of where the Zohar gets this idea that they were 49 levels low, because now you see you have to count 49 to get to high. Which, by the way, is a very, very nice thing to say, but it goes against most of the Rishonim, and there's no, and it goes against what the Chumash says. When the Chumash talks about counting the sphera is between what and what? In the Chumash, when it talks about counting sphera, between what and what is the sphera? Does it say anything there between the Korban Omer and Nishtei Lechem? Does it say there anything about Yitziat Mitzrayim and Matan Torah? Not a word about it. Which means if you, by the way, matter of fact, when you read the Pesukim about the Omer, what does it say? When you go into the land of Israel, this is the thing you're going to start keeping. Which means in the, throughout the years in the desert, they didn't keep it. Nonetheless, at least one of the Rishonim, the Ran, says that they must have counted the first year as well. You can find other Rishonim to say this also. They counted the first year as well. They counted the first year, which is very interesting. Well, it's very hard to say they counted down. Why? Did they know exactly what the date was going to be? So there is a claim that they had such a Masorah. But I'm saying, on a pshat level, the Omer has nothing to do. You hearing me? On a pshat level, it has nothing to do with Matan Torah. It is a totally agricultural phenomenon. Nothing to do with Matan Torah. On the other hand, in terms of Machshava, we'll want to say that there is somehow a connection. And by the way, to connect the Machshava together with the Pesukim is not all that difficult. I mean, the trick of doing this is actually paying attention. You mentioned the Shtei Halechem, so you pay attention to Shtei Halechem. What was the Omer brought from? What kind of barley? So you have animal food, and then you have lechem. What did you have by Pesach? You have matzah, which means you go from, I don't want to say animal food, but you go from this you go from lechem oni to, meaning you can't ignore going from lechem oni to lechem with some kind of animal food in between. The question, of course, is why the animal food there is in between. Okay, the mun, okay, how do I know the mun is connected? The mun is connected. How do I know the mun is connected? Better. Called lechem and shemayim, but better. How do I know the mun is connected to all this? Because it's the first time the Torah uses the word Omer. Right? That wasn't so hard. When does this take place? Between leaving Egypt, between getting to Eretz Yisrael. Oh, there's Omer over here. Omer Lugugela, right? Omer is mentioned over there. So if Omer is mentioned here, is Omer is mentioned there, so now I have a connection. If lechem is mentioned, then lechem is mentioned, so now I have a connection. Which is why I'm saying. The starting point is that this is totally agricultural, and this is totally something which is connected to the holiday, or maybe even historical, and therefore I wouldn't be tempted to connect them, but when I work a little bit harder and look at the content of the avoda, meaning the omer called omer, meaning the barley, by the way, the barley part is very, very disturbing, because where do we find a korban based on barley? Sota. Then we have to ask ourselves another question. Is this mitzvah somehow connected to something that went wrong? What went wrong? The eagle went wrong. What did Moshe do to all the people right after the eagle? What did he make them all do? Drink from the water. And what was in that water? The powder. So what we have is something very, very similar to the process of the sota. So now we have to ask ourselves a question. Is all of this somehow connected, or is this not, meaning, at some point you say, hold it, there's too many coincidences over here, and there really is a connection, but you see how hard I just now had to work in order to make it happen. Just to say very simply, oh, the Jews counted 49 days when they left Mitzrayim until they got to Har Sinai, is very nice to say it, but it's very hard to just to find that in the Pesukim themselves. The way I just now said it, I hope that you feel a little bit more comfortable with it, but again, the starting point for all this is the understanding that they sunk to the 49th level, and I'm going to say it again. If they sunk to the 49th level, and there's a whole Beit Halevi on this, if they sunk to the 49th level, so what does that tell you? We said this already in passing. What does that then tell you? That they left Egypt too soon. They left Egypt too soon. Why? Why are we saying they left Egypt too soon? Because they were supposed to stay longer, but they couldn't. Why couldn't they stay? They would have disappeared. So why did Kodesh Baruch Hu take them out? It's Pikuach Nefesh. Why did he take them out? Because he promised he would take them out. He promised he would. He has a covenant with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He's going to take them out. So why does he take them out then? I don't want to say Kodesh Baruch Hu has no choice, because that's not a nice way of saying it. But again, I'm going to say, why does he take them out? Because he has a... That's exactly what he says over here by this now. I have to take them out. I have a covenant. I have to take them out. You go back to the Brit Ben Abtarim, and God is saying, I'm going to keep up my word. But now, if I plug into this idea that they weren't ready to leave yet, I have a very big problem. By the way, what's the biggest proof that that's pshat, that they weren't ready to leave yet? The beginning of last week's parasha, what does it say? I can't take them... Derech Eretz Plishtim, why? Ki Karov Hu. What should that pasuk have said? I'm going to take them Derech Eretz Plishtim, Ki Karov Hu. That's the quickest way of getting to Eretz Yisrael. Why in the world are they going to go traveling and through the desert, wandering through the desert? But the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, no, they're not ready. When you read that pasuk, you should be saying, what? They're not ready? What are you talking about? It's been all this time. What do you mean they're not ready yet? Kodesh Baruch Hu says they're not ready yet. So now I'm going to say it again. Is there a price to be paid for not being ready to leave Mitzrayim? Is there a price to be paid? Is there a price to be paid that they sunk to the 49th level, now they have to get up to now they have to undo each of those levels? And again, that's the way that the Arizal is going to explain this idea of counting the 49 days. Of getting, we need to grow spiritually to be able to stand by Har Sinai. But do you all realize what I'm really asking now? It's not part of the original plan. Hold on 1 second. It's not part of the original plan. It's b'di'evit. Why do we need Matan Torah? Because we sunk to such a low level. Of course you're going to say, does that mean we don't get the Torah? Well, maybe it means something else. Maybe it means that we don't get the Torah in Sinai. Maybe we get the Torah someplace else. I'm not saying we don't get the Torah. Matter of fact, there's a beautiful midrash that says the following. Among the various approaches in the Midrashim and in the Mefarshim regarding what this proof is about Har Sinai, Zelocha Ha'ot, that's the proof. So it's a proof for who? Who's it a proof for? For Moshe. Zelocha Ha'ot, it's a proof for Moshe. So one approach is because, and you'll be familiar with this, you just may not have connected it. What do we know about Har Sinai? It was the biggest mountain? No, it was the smallest mountain. So Moshe saying is that I'm undeserving. Who am I? And that's what Kodesh Baruch Hu says, no, you get to Har Sinai, you'll see. I don't pick the biggest things. I don't pick the biggest things. I pick something which is appropriate, not necessarily the biggest, most impressive, whatever. So once Moshe sees that Har Sinai is not the most impressive mountain, but the truth is he would have already have seen it. When would he have seen that? He's standing there right. He's standing there right now. So it's a very nice shot, but just I don't know exactly how they how you get away with that. Perhaps. But there is. But I started to say, yeah. Okay. Zelachod. Okay. But there is a very nice midrash that says that how did Kadosh Baruch Hu make Har Sinai? So it says that he took Har HaMoriah, right, the place where the Akedah is. And he separates a little piece, the Lashon of the Medrash is, the same way that a woman will separate Chala and Ha'isa. He separates Chala, and he puts it off there in the Midbar, and that Chala is Har Sinai. That itself is very interesting. And you're thinking, you say, okay, so what do I do with this? So that's my question now. So what do you do with this? It means on the one hand that the Kedusha, yes, the Kedusha of Sinai is the same Kedusha of not just Eretz Yisrael, of the Har HaBayit. That itself, should I say that again? That itself is very interesting. Correct. But it's at least has the same spiritual DNA, but now it was mafresh as Chala, and now it has perhaps even more holiness. Correct. Incidentally, if you now, knowing this, you open up back in Bereshit, the Perek of the Akedah, and start comparing the Perek of the Akedah together with the Perek of Matan Torah, you'll find some very interesting parallels, which you may not have even thought to look at otherwise, both in terms of the Pshat and in terms of the Midrashim. Yeah? Well, you just had... Okay, very good. You have the Anan, Avram looks up, on which day does he look up? third day. Is the third day significant? No, give me some other connections. Just. Good. What else? No? See, I told you. I didn't behave last week because I want you to be able to do this. No? What else is there? No? Beautiful. What else? The shofar. What is, and Rashi even says it over here. Rashi by the shofar, the kol shofar, he goes, what's the kol? He goes, what is it? He goes, oh, that's from where? From the Isle of Yitzchak. What did the Isle of Yitzchak do? Which means, I'll say it again, that once I understand that there's the Midrash, and what's the Midrash doing? The Midrash recognized all these connections. And therefore it's saying there is somehow this intrinsic connection between the Har HaBayit, on the one hand, right? Har HaBayit, Har HaMoriah, and Har Sinai on the other hand. Okay, should we work a little bit harder on that, or... Yes? Yeah. The words are the same words. I'm telling you, if you start looking, you'll see the words are the same words, yeah. Just by the way, if anybody's interested, I think in my book, Emanations, I have a chapter on this. Go ahead, yeah. By Tuma, there's non-existence. That's what I said. There's non-existence. And that's not good. Yeah. Excuse me? Yeah, I'm saying if you start looking, you'll realize that these two chapters are much more connected than you would have imagined. But let's try to move on with this a little bit more. Let's try again. Were the Jews ready to leave Egypt? Yes or no? How do we know they weren't ready? Pshat and Chumash, how do you know they weren't ready? Because who says they're not ready? They're not ready. They're going to turn around. They'll see battle. They'll see war. Are they, okay, I'll say it differently if you want. Are they ready to go into Eretz Israel? Okay, so now I know that there's a problem. I saw one of the Rishonim say that the problem wasn't Mitzad Am Yisrael, it was Mitzad that of the Chet HaEmori was not completed till this point yet. They still needed a little bit more time till they kicked them out. Again, going back to the Brit Bein HaPtarim. Okay. So we're not ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. We have a problem. It could be, therefore, just to follow this through, it could be, therefore, that what would have been so bad if we went straight to Eretz Yisrael, we all went straight, instead of Har Grizim and Har Eval, we went straight to the Har HaBayit. By the way, do you realize how long it actually took to build the Beit HaMikdash on Har Moriah? How long did it take eventually? That's not 7 years and 7 years, not 14 years. How long was it? Yeah, 400 years or so, till they actually build the Beit HaMikdash. It takes an enormous amount of time. So what would have been so bad if they walked straight up, Derech Eretz Plishtim, marched straight to Har HaBayit and the Kadosh Baruch Hu in front of Har HaMoriah, the same way they look up on the third day and they see lightning and thunder and so on, and all the same elements. They just like Avram sees it from above. By the way, there's a deeper point to all this. Avram... By the way, you see, you always can go back to Bereshit when you want to. It's easy. See, we were so worried we were stuck in Shemot. No, it's easy. So, Avraham, during his career, we're told various times he builds a Mizbeach. But he never puts anything on the Mizbeach. Right? There's never, it never says he builds a Mizbeach, puts something on it, until the Akedah. Then he put the Yitzchak on it. Now, I think that there's something very significant about this, which means somehow the process of the Akedah is about being Megale, how would you say this in English? Revealing, being Megale, the idea of the Beit HaMikdash. And what's the idea of the Beit HaMikdash? That there is, first of all, that there could be Kedusha down on this earth. There's an interesting Chtam Sofer in last week's Parsha. Chtam Sofer says that the man, there's no question what bracha you make on man. Right? Hamotzi lechem min hashamayim, hamotzi lechem min haaretz, barei minei mizonot. Whole different question what bracha you would say on it. Rav Menachem Azari Defano said hamotzi lechem min hashamayim. The Chtam Sofer said that the man had a halacha of kodshim. Who can prove that it had halacha of kodshim? And the timing is like the timing of the Beit HaMikdash, right? It's in the day. The night follows the day, right? The night follows the day, and by the next morning, it's already has a din of Noser, Notar. So therefore, the Chacham Sofer says, therefore, we see that the man has a halacha of Kadshim. So it's very interesting that Kadosh Baruch Hu is getting them ready. We all thought that the man was teaching the laws of Shabbat, right? That's what we would assume. 6 days at work, seven, even though it's not real work. And now suddenly we realize, hold it a second, this has something to do with Kadshim. But Kadshim is what I'm thinking of right now. Let me go back to Rashi. Had they never sinned with the Egel, would they have made a Mishkan? So you like my question, you don't like the question. Can I ask you a different question now, which sounds like the exact same question, but when you'll listen to it, you'll realize it's not the same question? So, if they never sinned with the Egel, would there have been a Beit HaMikdash? Was that the same question, or was that a different question? Did it sound real similar? And Right. It's a very nice thing to say. Can you bring me any kind of proof against that? Bring me some kind of proof against this. That there's reference to a Mishkan or a Beit Elokim or whatever you are, Mikdash, before the Egel. How far? You're going back to Yaakov. Good. Is that a good proof? Where else do you see it? Have you read Oz Yashir? There's a couple of references in there. There's a couple of references in Oz Yashir. The whole question then, why at the end of the Aseret Dibrot, is there a Mizbeach? What's the point? Well, why are you telling me halachot about Mizbeach right now? Aside from the fact that there may be other questions in Parshat Mishpatim. But I'm going to say this over again. I think that the pshat in Rashi, and I'll repeat this, B'li Nedra, when we get closer to the Chet Ha'Egel and the Mishkan and so on, but I think that the pshat in Rashi is not that there never would have been a Mishkan, right, had there not been a Chet Ha'Egel. There never would have been a Mishkan for a different reason. What's the reason? Because we never would have been in the desert for 40 years. We would have gone straight into Eretz Yisrael. If you go straight into Eretz Yisrael, you don't need a temporary Makom Kedusha. Because you're going straight into Eretz Israel. There never would have been a Mishkan, but of course there would have been a Beit HaMikdash. Excuse me? And I'll say it again. Things don't work out the way they're supposed to. Now let me try all over again. Let's go to Vayikra. What's the single most important episode? Oh, I'll make it easier. The single most important narrative in Sefer Vayikra. Of course. Why is it the single most important narrative in Vayikra? Because there's only two. And you don't remember what the other one is right now, so that's why it's the most important one. If you remember the other one, so then we can consider it. What's the other one? No. Miriam's in Bamidbar. Isn't this great? Yeah? What? That's what we're talking about. So what's the other one? Okay, fine. You'll find out. Should I tell you? Or the Makalil. Makalo's the other one. Okay, so there's only two narratives in the whole book. I think the most important episode, and for that matter, Psukim, is the death of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu is that before the Mishkan can become operative, what do we need to happen? We need to show how serious the Makom Mikdash is, that people can die somehow creating the Kedusha. Now, I want to pause there for a second. What exactly, especially according to the Ramban, what exactly is the whole purpose of bringing a Korban? What happens if you bring the Korban? I bring the Korban, but who's supposed to go in place of you? So how do I learn that process, that the animal's in place of you, when somebody dies instead of the animal? Which basically is what happens in Adon Avihu. Where do I learn for the first time that an animal can take the place of a person? Yakeda. So, let's try this all over again. What have we noticed that there is a connection between the whole chapter of the Yakeda and the chapter of preparing for Matan Torah? What's the key, that takeaway from the Yakeda that you could put a person on a mizbeach, right? Midat hadin. How do I know it's midat hadin? Right? Elokim nisa es Avram. Midat hadin could be coming at a person, and but still midat harachamim can come in, and I could take the person off of the mizbeach, and then I could put the animal in the place of a person. Which means the whole key of the Beit HaMikdash, of the Korban, is right there. That's the message of the Akedah. That Kodesh Baruch Hu can take your son, your only son, the son you love, and raise him up. And what's the continuation? And now take him down. Meaning, and what's the most important message of the Akedah? Take him down. Why put him up if you're going to take him down? To show that the Korban's going to work. Yes? Do you all hear what I'm saying now? This is where you see that a Korban works. What am I working so hard to try to point out now? That somehow Matan Torah may very well be connected with the Mishkan or the eventual Beit HaMikdash as well. Can somebody prove this to me? Okay, you have the Mizbeach. What? The Amud Anan. Good. What else? What else? Moshe Rabbeinu is going to go up and he's going to bring down the Luchot. What do you do with the Luchot when you bring them down? Where do you put them? One second. That sounds like a simple question. Where do you put them when you bring down? You have the Luchot now. What do you do with them? You put them inside. Okay, you put them in Aaron. Where do you put the Aaron? You put the Aaron in the... Meaning, this problem, which maybe we never thought about before, what do you do it? Which means... It may very well be that this whole thing that we call Matan Torah is actually what it's getting us ready for is the Beit HaMikdash. That's what it is. But by the way, go back again to the pasuk that I told you was the most important pasuk, at least today, by the snare. What was the pasuk? What was the sign? Ta'avdun et Elokim Bahar Hazeh. The Ibn Ezra, but if you look for it here, you won't find it. And if you look in Perek Yutet, you won't find it, because it doesn't say it all the way down to, I think, Perek Kavav or so. He says, what is the fulfillment of this Pasuk? The building of the Mishkan. Tavdun et Elokim Bahar Hazeh. That you're going to build a Mishkan on this place. Which means it's the building of the Mishkan which is the issue. And I'm going to say the whole thing all over again. Yes, you're still with me in the whole line of thought now? If we left too early, what was the downside of leaving too early? I mean, by the way, the Beit HaLevi really says the reason that we're going to go into Galut later, the reason that the first Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed is because we left Egypt too soon. One second, that's a little scary. How would that line of reasoning work? Because we left too soon, we weren't ready yet to be Oved et Hashem in the way that we were supposed to. So when we get to Har Sinai, what do we end up doing? So, okay, let's work through the series of mistakes about what happens. We get to Har Sinai. Vayidaber Elokim et kol hadrim ha'ela lemor. God says all of these things. What does Rashi say in that pasuk? Really? In that pasuk? Vayidaber Elokim et kol hadrim ha'ela lemor. What does Rashi say there? Perikuf Pasuk Aleph, read Rashi. No, Perikuf Pasuk Aleph. Continue. Keep going. You didn't go far enough? You can make me read it. Yeah, the next part. Et kol dvarim ha'ele melamed shama kodesh baruch hu aseret hadibrot b'dibur achad. That God said all aseret hadibrot in one dibur, b'dibur achad. Ma she'i efshar la'adam lomar kein. Well, that which a person couldn't possibly say. Imkein ma tam lomar od anochi v'lo ye'elecha. She'chazar upiresh al kol Dibor v'dibor b'fnei atzmo. He came back and explained, and he started breaking the band explaining them. Okay, let's understand this, Rashi. What was the main point of Aseret HaDibrot? Now, when I say Aseret HaDibrot, I'm not talking about the book. I'm not talking about the when they're put on etched on stone. I'm saying, what's the main point of Ma'amar Har Sinai? Let's put it that way. What's the main point of the revelation sign? I'll give you two possibilities. Is it content, which means what God said, or is the fact that God is speaking? Is it the Gilui Shechina, as it were, or is it what it is that God said? If you could break it away and say one side is more important than the other, is it more important that God spoke to all of Am Yisrael, or is it more important what God said to us? What is Rashi telling us over here? What's more important? How do I know that he's telling me this is more important? Because nobody understood a word. He said all Aseret HaDibrot at once. Now, you were thinking of a different Rashi. Which Rashi were you thinking of? No, that's not what you're thinking of. You were thinking about Rashi in Perek of Talad, Pasuk Yud Bet, right? You should say right. You should agree. Right? What? Vayomer Shema Moshe, alei alei hehara, come to the mountain, veheyesham, and be there, v'tnelucha, I'm going to give you, et luchot ha'evin, v'hatorah, v'hamitzvah, shekatafti l'oratam. I'm going to give you what? I'm going to give you the luchot ha'evin, but I'm going to also give you the Torah, asher katafti. So the Gemara ends up saying, this is the Gemara, and this is the Mishnah, and this is everything. Yerushalmi says, even Masha Talmud Vatik, right? Rashi here says, et luchot ha'evin v'torah mitzvah shekatav l'otam, kol sheish me'ot v'shlosh esrei mitzvot b'chlal aseret ha'dibrot hein. That's what you're thinking of. They should have been thinking of that. So here Rashi is saying is that included in the aseret ha'dibrot is all 613 mitzvot. And then he tells you Rav Sadia Gaon actually wrote and explained to you how to break them down. This is incredibly interesting because now I think this is called in mathematics the associative principle. Is that if the 10 is equal, right? Gadish Baruch Hu says, Kol Dim Eila. It's all 10. But all 10 is really all 613. That means that what did God say at Har Sinai? He said all 613 mitzvot at once. What do the people hear? What do people hear? How do you know that the people, how do you know that people didn't hear anything? And when they ask for Moshe, what do they say? What do they say? Okay, so let's read the psukim immediately after. Immediately after Ma'amar Har Sinai, what does the pasuk say? V'chol ha'am, perek tedvav, v'chol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot. They see the sound. It doesn't say they hear. Matter of fact, they say, v'yomer Moshe, deber ata imanu v'nishma'a. If you speak, then we have a chance of hearing. So God speaks, and it doesn't say the people hear anything. The people see. What do they see? What do they see? They see all 613 mitzvot. What does that mean? But then God wants to break it down into one after the other, and that's where we learn that this is Rashi's is following the opinion that they only heard. You hear the word heard? They only heard Anochi v'lo yelecha. All the others they didn't hear. Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to speak to them, but what do the people do? What do the people do? What do the people do? They say, Moshe, no. We don't want God to speak to us. What does Moshe say to them? V'yomer Moshe, deber atoy imonu v'nishma, v'adibay imonu l'kim, pen namut, we'll die, which is where the whole dying comes from. V'yomer Moshe, ela'am, al tiro, don't be afraid, ki lavor nasot etchem, by the way, nasot, nisa l'kim, back by the Akedah as well, nasot etchem ba'l'kim, God comes to uplift you. U'bavor tiyah yirato p'nechem, l'v'ti techto, he wants to put the fear of God upon you that you won't be able to sin. So what happens? They say no. They all move away. So what happens if they move away? They are going to sin. Which sin are they going to do? Which sin are they going to do? The egel. What happens if they do an egel? They even go against the very two that they heard. Right? Anochi and Lo Yelecha. They break those as well. But had they listened to everything directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it would have been a completely different experience. Pause here. Yeah? I don't know what to say. What it really comes down to is which one of the Rishonim you're going to accept on this. Look, theoretically, Kodesh Baruch Hu says all 10 to them. So that's exactly right. The problem. So if you follow Rashi, so then he says all 10, but all 10 are really all 613. So we have to pause there for a second and I want to go backwards again. What was the objective? The objective was that they should see the big picture, what we call the real big picture of Judaism. Then what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu want to do? He wants to break it down into all the details. And at that point, they back away and say, no, we're going to die if we hear any of this. We just can't do this. Moshe says, no, you won't be able to sin. But they move all the way, which, by the way, this itself is incredibly important. It means that our Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to give us the Torah. He wants to give it to us. But what do? I'm going to say it again. We weren't ready to accept the Torah at that point. Moshe is then going to go up for 40 days and 40 nights, and he's going to come down. And what are we going to prove when he comes down? That we are not ready, right? We're not ready. We're impatient. We can't tell time, right? We move in other directions. We sin with the ego, correct. So what happens then? What are we guilty then at the foot of Har Sinai? We're guilty of Gilui Arayot and Shfichat Dam, Iman of Avodah Zarah, all wrapped into one, right? According to Rashi, all three are there. They killed Chur, yes? They're guilty of Avodah Zarah. Anything else we're missing? And then it says, Komo Lotzachek, Rashi says, Gilui Arayot. Which therefore means that in the future, and that day was, according to Chazal, that day was Shavuos Batamuz, 40 days after whenever Matan Torah was, which you don't know the exact date, is Shavuos Batamuz, which means that the Jews in the future will be guilty of Gilui Arayot, Shfichat Dam, Avodah Zarah, which is what's going to destroy the first Beit HaMikdash. That's what the Beit HaLevi was saying. The Beit HaLevi is saying is because they leave Egypt too soon, they're going to end up sinning, they're going to end up being undeserving, they're going to end up creating this whole situation that there is sin within the community. And I'm going to say it again, what are the various parts? We're not ready, we can't do this, we can't accept the Torah. See, the funny thing about all this is that there's still Jews today who love the big, big picture of Judaism, but they don't like the details. On the other hand, let's be honest, there are some Jews who love the details, but they lose sight of the big picture. And the challenge in terms of Matan Torah is really to accept both. There's a big picture, and there's also details. And that's exactly what we see going on over here, is that they were unwilling to do both. The big, beautiful picture, that was great. All 613 commandments they see at once. But if God starts to give details, Moshe's, you won't be able to sin. But they were just not ready for it. So I'm going to go back again and say that what's underneath the surface of this whole problem, what's the problem? The problem which is Matan Torah. It's very funny to call this a problem, right? What's underlying this whole problem is that they need to leave Egypt too soon because they can't stay any longer. They can't stay any longer is when we start this whole process, which is not going to work out the way that it's supposed to. They can't go straight to Eretz Israel. They need to spend longer time in the desert. Therefore, God is going to give us a Torah in the desert. When God gives us a Torah in the desert, Moshe at that point becomes completely transformed. Moshe becomes completely transformed because now Moshe is going to be the one to go up and Moshe is the one to come down. Even at Har Sinai in Perek Yutet, God says to him, I'm going to speak directly to you and no one will ever doubt you again. No one. Your position will be solidified that Moshe is the one who is, again, this in-between, representing the people on the one hand, representing God on the other, which then brings us back again to Perek Yutet to see exactly that's what Yitro understood, and that's why that whole Perek is sitting there at the particular place. On the other hand, had they have been ready, they could have gone straight into Eretz Yisrael, they would have been able to go straight and build the Beit HaMikdash there, just like Yaakov sees by the Sulam. He sees, oh, this is, you know, Shaar HaShemayim. This is, you know, going to build a Beit Elokim and build it right there. Just like Avram, he sees the place from afar, oh, this is the place to build a Mizbeach. This is the place in order to be over to Hashem. That for some reason, and now here's where it gets scary, for some reason, Am Yisrael were not ready to do it. So now, when did we first realize that Am Yisrael is not ready? In the beginning of B'Shalach. What happened at the beginning of B'Shalach? God says, I can't take them there, Eretz Plishtim, ki karofu. Now, based on everything I've said today, when should we have first been alerted that there's a problem and that not going directly to Eretz Yisrael? It's right there when Moshe says, will I take them out? I mean, Paro is going to listen? Am Yisrael is going to listen? And what's the Kodesh Baruch Hu's answer? It's a very sad answer now, in retrospect. What's the answer? No, Am Yisrael is not ready. It doesn't make a difference. I'm taking you out to the desert. They're not ready to go into Israel. We don't realize at that time, that's what he's saying. We don't realize at that time that he's saying no. Tavduna telkim ala har hazeh. So it may have sounded like a very nice thing. This will be the proof. And I could just imagine Moshe walking around, scratching his head. So what exactly is the proof? Tavduna telkim ala har hazeh. You're going to serve God on this mountain. What's the avoda on this mountain? So now you realize that Yavod on the one hand could be the Korbanot before Matan Torah. On the other hand, it could be Matan Torah itself, the fact of Kodesh Baruch Hu. But it's not really Avoda. The word Avoda is what we want to understand. On the other hand, could it really be this whole other level of Avoda? And the whole level of Avoda is that this is going to be the Mishkan. We're going to have a Mishkan because of this. And the Mishkan sounds, well, what a wonderful thing, a Mishkan. And then we realize, hold it a second. The only reason we have a Mishkan is because we didn't go straight into Eretz Yisrael. Why don't we go straight into Eretz Yisrael? Because we weren't ready. Which means it gets very scary when we realize that sometimes there are processes that have to take place, and when you try to push, you know, make a process much quicker on the one hand, there may very well be a price to pay on the other hand, and we don't realize that at the time. So the same way that we should have been alerted to the problem in the beginning of Bishalach, where it says that they don't go Derech Eretz Pshin because it's too close, it's going to happen later on. Later on, we're going to find out, oh, there's going to be a Chet HaEgel. But right, according to Rashi, I don't know if you remember this, according to Rashi, the 40 years in the desert is because of the Chet HaEgel. Do you remember this? Rashi by the Meraglim says it's because of this. He says that's the reason it was for 40 days. They went to Torah for 40 days in order to be measured, because Rashi is the problem. If it says Yom L'Shana, Yom L'Shana, they've already been in the desert, they've already been there for a year. The Chet HaEgel slowed down the whole process by a year. Rashi's problem is, how can you say that Yom L'Shana is now, it doesn't get you up to 40, only gets it, there's only 39 left. So he says, no. They got a suspended sentence when they did Chet HaEgel. They were put on probation. But as soon as they sinned with the Chet HaMeraglim, now that they got called on that, and Rashi really...
Once they built the Mishkan, it feels like it's already Yeshua, like the fact that like Moshe won't be the Melech HaMashiach now.
Correct. I'm just saying that Rashi says it's black and white, that the 40 years is because of the Chet HaEgel, not because of the Chet HaMeraglim. The Chet HaEgel is what causes the 40 years for the Egel. So that's what I'm saying. Is now you start realizing to serve God on this mountain is actually goes exactly with, again, it sounds like a wonderful thing. Building the Mishkan maybe sounds like a wonderful thing. See, that I think is what's shot in Rashi. It's not that there never would have been a Beit Elokim. There never would have been a place to bring a korban. Lavodat Hashem, I think the idea is also there, korbanot. I mean, I don't see how you can read through the whole dialogue between Moshe and between Paro. No, we need to take the animals, we need to bring korbanos, and so that's all there. You can't say that the whole thing is there just as some kind of replacement because they needed something which was concrete. Why would Yaakov say, I'm going to build a Beit Elokim, it's there before, and I'm going to say it again. Read through the Oz Yashir. But there's a whole other problem. The whole of the problem is what I've been pointing out. The whole of the problem is that we think that Matan Torah, everything worked out the way it was supposed to. I'm pointing out now, it could be that it was never supposed to be a Matan Torah. It's not there by the Brit Bazar. Not that we weren't supposed to get the Torah. But why get in the middle of the desert? Why get in this place? Why does the Kodesh Baruch Hu have to rip out a part of Har HaMoriah and stick it in the desert? Why? Because we can't go straight to Har HaMoriah like we were supposed to. That's what I think that Midrash is trying to tell us. And we think, oh, it's such a wonderful thing that we made it over there to Har Sinai. No, we weren't able to go Derech Eretz Plishtim. And if that's the case, the first hint we got to this was all the way back by the Sneh, when Moshe questions, Am Yisrael is really ready? And what's the Kodesh Baruch Hu's answer? Well, we don't realize it at the time. No, they're not ready. Tavduna tel kim al harazeh. You're going to serve me over here. When we read that pasuk, none of us were bothered in the least bit about this. There's a whole Indian about that as well. That is when he continues.